All right, good evening. This fella, he walks into the doctor's office, and the receptionist asks him, he says, "What do you got?" He says, "Shingles." She takes down his name and his address and his medical insurance number, and says somebody will be with him. So a few minutes later, one of the nurses comes out and says, "What do you got?" He says, "Shingles." So she takes down his weight and his height and his medical history in duplicate and in triplicate. You know how they do. So a few minutes later, one comes back and tells him, says, "You can go in. Doctor will be with you shortly." But the nurse practitioner comes in and says, "What do you got?" He says, "Shingles." So she takes a blood test and a blood pressure test and one of them cardiograms or something like that and says, "Take off your clothes and the doctor, he'll come in and check you out in a minute." So he waits and here comes the doctor and the doctor comes in and says, "What do you got?" He says, "Shingles." The doctor says, "Where?" He says, "In my truck out back. Where do you want them?" Check off the joke. There, done. All right. I know you didn't expect to see me this evening. I didn't expect to be here, and Chris didn't expect to be home, but we hope that he'll be all right. I've never been too good at math. Yeah, I'm okay at math, but not. I was much better at math when I was younger. Math is one of those things that even though I'm a programmer, I don't really use it day to day, and when you don't use things, you tend to lose that ability a little bit. So I'm not as good at math as maybe as I used to be. But in my Bible studies, one of the things that I've learned, Big Red, is that God isn't very good at math either. That God doesn't do math. Sometimes God just tosses the math right out the window. And we're going to look at some Bible stories this evening when the math just doesn't add up. Math just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And you're going to be super familiar with the Bible stories that we're going to cover. We're going to cover four of them, and I'm not going to mention hardly anything new that you hadn't heard a million times about each of these stories. But hopefully we'll be able to sort of tie them together and make some sort of point, point this afternoon. Now we're going to start in Luke chapter 9, a story that you are uber familiar with, that you've known since the time that you were little children. But we'll see what we can get out of it. We're going to start with the sandwich stories, I like to say. You got 5 loaves and 2 fish, and so that makes a sandwich. If you just had the fish, it would be a fish story, and if you just had the bread, it would just be a bread story. But since you have the loaves and the fish, then it's a sandwich story. We have a couple of sandwich stories in the Bible. Luke chapter 9, starting in verse 10, they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida, but the crowds learned about it, and they followed him. He welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God. He healed those who needed healing. Now, I've said it many times, but at this point in Jesus' life, he's drawing very, very large crowds. Just a chapter before this, he cast out a demon from someone. He brought a little dead girl back to life, and that kind of news spreads fast. And so crowds are coming out of the woodworks to try to find Jesus, to hear what Jesus has to say, and many of them hoping to be healed by Jesus. In verse 12, late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, "Send the crowd away so that they can go into the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging, because we are in a remote place here." Now, if you were to try to put yourselves in the shoes of those disciples, these young men, I think I would probably get tired after some time of having such large crowds around me all the time. They're not there for me. They're there to see Jesus, but they're there all the time. The disciples say, "Jesus, send them home. Let them go find some food. Let us be able to get some rest here." Verse 13, Jesus replied, "You give them something to eat." And they answered, "We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, unless we go buy food for all of this crowd." About 5,000 men were there. Now, when you try to do some math here, even if we're not very good at it, this is some very simple math that doesn't make sense. We've got 5 loaves of fish. We've got 5 loaves of bread. They don't make loaves of fish anymore. 5 loaves of bread. We've got 2 fish. We've got 5,000 men. Now, if you were to try to, add some women and children into the mix, I think it's real easy, Leslie, that we can say that there are maybe 10, maybe 15,000 people that are in this crowd. Now, loaves of bread and 2 fish don't feed 10 or 15,000. That's real easy for us to figure out. Verse 14, but he said to his disciples, "Have them sit down in groups of 50 each." And the disciples did so. Everyone sat down, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke them. He gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. And they all ate and they were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Now, we're familiar with this story. Jesus feeds them all. They take up 12 baskets of leftovers. And tomorrow they'll all have leftover fish sandwiches. That's just the way it works. Here's the sermon. Here's the tagline. Here's the part that I want you to remember when we get done with all the stories this evening. Whatever they had, and in this case what they had was 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Whatever they had, plus, that's addition. We talked about math. That's plus, that's addition. Whatever they had, plus the power of God, equaled exactly what they needed. Whatever they had, plus the power of God, equaled exactly what was needed. Now, if we were to read Mark's account of this story, Mark would record this story too. And in following this particular section in Mark's account, in Mark chapter 8, Mark, there's a few more things to say about it. The disciples, in this case, had forgotten to bring any bread on the boat afterwards, except for 1 loaf that they had with them in the boat. And Jesus would say, be careful, watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. They discuss with this with one another, and I can see them, they're looking at each other like, well, is he mad because we forgot to bring the bread? They're looking at each other, were you supposed to bring the bread? Was I supposed to bring the bread? Was Jesus supposed to bring, who was supposed to bring the bread? And aware of this, Jesus said, why are you still talking about the bread? It's not about the actual bread. Verse 18, do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? Don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many basketful of pieces did you pick up? And they answered him, 12. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketful of pieces did you pick up? And they answered him and said, 7. He said to him, do you still not understand? In some ways, I'm kind of like the disciples. No, I don't really understand. The math doesn't really add up. I don't necessarily understand how that few a fish, that few pieces of bread could feed that many people. Now, that's the sandwich stories. We're already done with the sandwich stories, and now I'm going to give you some fishing stories. There's some good stories in the New Testament about fishing, and we're going to cover just a couple of them. The first one is in Luke chapter 5. Good fishing story. Luke chapter 5, and we're going to start in verse 1 and read a few verses. Luke chapter 5 and verse 1. One day as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, great crowds pressed in on him, same as we just read. Great crowds are all around him, pressing in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed 2 empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and he taught the crowds from there. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, now, go out where it's deeper. Let down your nets to catch some fish. Master, Simon replies, we worked hard all night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I will let down the nets again. Simon, thinking a whole lot like I would be thinking, I fished here all night. I've dropped a net over every square inch of the bottom of this lake, and I have not caught a single thing. And oh, and by the way, I'm the professional fisherman here. Not you, Jesus. I know you're great, but I'm the professional fisherman here. But if you say so, I'll do it again. We'll go out, we'll let down these nets one more time. Verse 6, and this time their nets were so full of fish that they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish on the verge of sinking. And Simon Peter realized what had happened. He fell to his knees before Jesus and said, oh Lord, please leave me. I am too much of a sinner to be around you. He was all struck by the number of fish that they had caught. As were the others with him. His partners, James, John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. Jesus replied to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will be fishing for men. And as soon as they landed, they left everything and they followed Jesus. Now, I'm going to tell you, as someone who's done a lot of fishing, I've done a lot of fishing, you do tend to catch your fish sort of all at once, back to back to back. You know, you can be fishing all day and not catch anything, and then you'll catch 1, you'll catch 2, you'll catch 3, and then it'll be done. That's just the way fishing goes sometimes. But I've never fished all night, but I've never fished all night and not caught a single fish and then filled up the boat. Now, I've been in a boat that was sinking, but it wasn't because I put enough fish in the boat to make it sink. So that's a different thing altogether. Whatever they had, and in this case, it was a boat and the ability to go out there and fish, to drop down those nets. Whatever they had, plus, now that's addition, plus the power of God equaled exactly what they needed. Let me give you another fishing story, Matthew 17. Matthew 17, and starting in about verse 24, this is fishing story number two. It's the third story about fish, but fishing story number two. The collectors of the temple tax came to Peter and asked him, verse 24, "Doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax?" "Yes, he does," Peter replied. Then he went into the house, but before he had a chance to speak, Jesus asked him, "What do you think, Peter? The kings tax their own people or the people that they have conquered?" Peter answers, "They tax the people that they have conquered." "Well then," Jesus said, "the citizens are free. However, we don't want to offend them. Go down to the lake, throw in a line, open the mouth of the first fish that you catch. You will find a large silver coin. Take it and pay the tax for both of us." Jesus tells Peter again, a fisherman, and I've said this for many years, anytime I've talked about Peter, someone who's probably caught a million fish in his life. I wonder how many fish Jesus had caught. Maybe Jesus had been fishing some as a kid, like most kids do. Peter's a professional. He's caught a million fish in his life. Jesus tells him, go out there and throw a line. You're going to catch a fish with a coin in its mouth. And I want you to go pay that tax for us. Whatever that they had, in this case, Peter had a fishing line and the ability to go out there and throw it. Whatever they had, plus, that's addition, the power of God equaled exactly what they needed. And in this case, it's a little bit of money to pay the taxes. I'll give you a freebie on this story. This is the temple tax that was required by the law of Moses. You can go back to Exodus and chapter 30 and read about this. And we won't read that, but everyone who was of fighting age, everyone who was 20 years old and older would be required to pay this temple tax. And so all the way from the time of Moses all the way to the time of Jesus, they're still collecting this same tax. Let me ask you a little question to think about. And again, this is a freebie, but let me ask you this question. Why does Jesus only instruct Peter to go fishing for taxes, to pay Jesus' tax and Peter's tax, but not the rest of the apostles' tax? Why is it that the other apostles seem to get out of having to pay the temple tax in this particular story? Now, I don't know the answer exactly. We don't even know that the other apostles were necessarily there. But I'll give you a good guess. And my guess, Chris, is the other apostles weren't 20 years old. I'm willing to bet that only Jesus and Peter were old enough to pay the temple tax in this particular story. That's just me guessing. Whatever they had, in this case, the ability to throw a line, the willingness to go out there and do it, plus, it's addition, the power of God equaled exactly what they needed in that situation. Let me give you an Old Testament story, 2 Kings chapter 4. Again, a story that we're very, very familiar with. 2 Kings chapter 4. We'll read seven verses. The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, said, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. You know that he revered the Lord. Now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves." And Elisha replied to her, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Your servant," she answers, "has nothing at all, except for a small jar of olive oil." Elisha said, "Go around and ask all of your neighbors for empty jars. Don't just ask for a few. No, go ask for a bunch of jars, everything you can find. Then go inside, shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour the oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to the side." She left him. She shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, bring me another one. But he replied, there is not a jar left. The oil then stopped flowing. She went, she told the man of God, and he said, go sell the oil, pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on what is left. This is a woman who is about to lose her sons to servitude, to slavery, because she cannot pay her debts. The only thing that she had in her house was a small little jar of olive oil. Whatever she had, little jar of oil. Plus, now that's addition. Plus the power of God equaled exactly what she needed. I'll give you one more story and we'll wrap it up. One more story. It's in the same chapter, 2 Kings chapter 4. It's down in verse 42. We'll read 42 through 44. It says, a man from bringing the man of God 20 loaves of barley bread baked from the first ripe grain along with some heads of new grain. Now, we'll stop and point out that this man is bringing Elisha the 10%. He's bringing Elisha, the man of God, his tithe, okay? He is tithing to Elisha. Give it to the people. This is Elijah, instead of Elijah accepting this. Elijah says, give it to the people to eat. The man says, how can I set this amount, how can I set this before 100 men? His servant asked. But Elisha answered, give it to the people to eat, for this is what the Lord says, they will eat and they will have some left over. He set it before them, they ate, and they had some left over, according to the word of the Lord. Now, if we try to do the math on this one, 20 loaves of bread feeding 100 men, I might can stretch that one, maybe. That's a little bit better than 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed 5, 10, 15,000 people. But again, the point of the story is, the guy says, how am I supposed to set this little amount of bread before this great amount of people? It's not enough to feed them. But whatever he had, in this case, these few loaves of barley bread, plus, that's addition, the power of God equaled exactly what they needed at that time. Now here's the message, and I'm sure all of you can fill in what the application and the message is. It's quite clear and quite easy. Whatever you have, plus the power of God, is exactly what is needed. And I'll say it again. Whatever you have to offer, plus the power of God, is exactly what needed. God created the whole world. Stretching some bread, stretching some fish, stretching some olive oil, pulling silver out of the mouth of a fish to pay the temple tax, none of those things are beyond God's ability to do. But here's the other half of the story, and the other half's only going to take a minute. Here's the other half of the story. The power of God is only half the story. Yes, God supplied the power in all of these stories that we read. But I want you to notice that in none of these stories was God or the representative of God, being Jesus and Elijah. God supplied the power, but in none of these stories did God take the actions. Or do the action. Jesus didn't feed 5,000 men. You ever thought about it that way? Jesus didn't feed 5,000 men. 10, 15, whatever it was. Jesus didn't walk around, at least we don't read, with the baskets, handing out, distributing loaves and fish. Jesus didn't do the fishing. In fact, we never read that Jesus went out and caught any fish. He didn't cast any nets. He didn't throw any lines. Elisha, in his story, representing God, didn't feed the 100 men. Elisha, in the other story, didn't go house to house from neighbor to neighbor to neighbor getting pots. And Elisha never poured any oil. It was the disciples who gave out the food. It was the disciples who distributed the loaves and the fish to the 5,000, the 10,000, the 15,000, whatever it was. It was Simon who would go out and throw out the line and catch the fish with the silver coin in its mouth to pay the temple tax. It was the man from Beel-Shalisha-Shalisha-Shalisha that distributed the barley bread. And it was the widow who would go house to house, neighbor to neighbor, gathering pot after pot to pour and pour and pour and pour that oil into. Whatever we have, plus, that's addition. The power of God can fill the world's needs, but it requires our participation. Some might think that it would be blasphemous to suggest that God needs anything, and certainly, in some sense, that's true. God doesn't need anything that we can supply. But God set creation in place in a way that we are meant to participate in. We are meant to participate in the will of God, in the plan of God, and for the good of the world. And I'll reread that the way I wrote it, because I wrote it better than I said it. God set creation in place in a way that we are meant to participate for the good of the world. In the very beginning, God loved us enough to make us part of His plan. It's not the amount that's important. And one of the things that this story and other stories like it make very clear to us is it's not the amount that's important. It's the willingness to give that matters. It's the willingness to serve that matters. It's the willingness to be stewards that matters. The willingness to participate in the plan of God. The willingness to share our talents and to share our time and to share our energy. The willingness to let God use us in His plan for the good of the world. Whatever you have, plus the power of God, can fulfill whatever is needed. Whether that be fishing or bread or gathering pots, whether that be sharing a meal or paying someone's bill or teaching a Bible class. If you are willing, you can be used. Don't ever buy into the devil's lie. He desperately wants you to believe it, that you have nothing to offer. He really wants you to buy into that, that you just don't have anything to offer this church, that you don't have anything to offer your family, that you don't have anything to offer the kingdom of God. Don't buy into that. It's a lie that He desperately wants you to believe. Whatever you have, if you're willing, plus the power of God, can fill great needs and can be of great use in the service of His kingdom. So go out there and share it. We're going to offer the invitation this evening. It could be that you have some need. It could be that you want to become a Christian this evening. It could be that you want to come and ask for the prayers of the church for a number of different reasons. You know those needs, and certainly there are many, many here who are who would very much like to be able to help you and to pray for you and to support you. We'll offer the invitation this evening. If you have any need at all, do come as we stand and sing.